Hi guys, welcome to a new episode of our podcast. We thought today we'd talk a bit about niyamas. So if you watched our latest episode and one of the previous ones, we delved a bit into the yamas of yoga, and we thought of mixing it up and doing a niyama today. And we're gonna start with the first one, which is sosha. And yeah, Monica, maybe you can do a bit of an intro of what that is, what niyamas are, why they're important, why this is the first one, maybe, and yeah, what's it all about?
Yeah, hi everyone. So we talk about one of the niyamas today. The niyamas are observances, rules, or guidelines, and they represent the relationship that we have with ourselves. So these are the things that are that yoga advises us to practice to have a whole holistic yoga practice. And one of the things that we need to manifest is saucha. I call it saucha. It was pronounced to me that way by my first yoga teacher, and it means purity or cleanliness. And we can have a conversation about where we should manifest this purity or cleanliness, because we'll find out together there are a lot of places and occasions when we should have saucha in mind.
And what would you say is the difference between yamas and niyamas then in this context?
Well, the niyamas are the rules or the observances or the guidelines that we are practicing in relation with ourselves, and the yamas are what we should practice in relation with the others, with society as a whole. So now if we refer to saucha, the purity or the cleanliness, the first thing that comes to mind, the very basic thing, right, is about personal hygiene. Because, of course, we all know the saying that your body is a temple. We live in it, we dwell in it throughout our entire lifetimes, and we should treat it with respect and keep it clean. A very trivial example comes from the actual yoga practice, which at times it can be quite physical. If you are pursuing a very physical asana practice, during which you sweat a lot, such as hot yoga, or maybe even hardcore vinyasa yoga that's quite sweaty, then of course we should have clean clothes for practice always. Because it's not, it doesn't go like, yeah, I can maybe use these set of clothes the next day. It's not the best decision, I'd say.
I'd say, yeah, absolutely. I'd also advise usually to go for clean clothes, like in general, would be a good idea. Especially, I guess, if you are in a sort of like a gym or a yoga practice, because we're talking about this, right, specifically, where you are going to put in some effort, you are potentially going to sweat. And so it's a good idea to, yeah, probably start from a clean place, so to speak.
Yeah, why I'm highlighting this is because you sometimes find some old gym clothes and think, hey, I think I maybe used these 2 or 3 days ago. I should maybe, you know, have a go at it once again. But in fact, they smell okay because the sweat has dried, and then you put them on and then you sweat the second time in them. And that's where the story goes sour. So to put it, no pun intended. So yeah, I think we all got the picture. One of the very important things that we should talk about here is that in yoga, we have very specific cleaning or purification techniques. and they're meant for body parts, and they're meant for you know, more less they're meant for less solid and palpable parts. And I can detail very shortly about very specific techniques. We have Jalaneti, that is the nose and sinuses purification technique. You generally use a neti pot and you let the salty water run through your nasal duct with the help of this neti pot. There's Vamana Dauti that involves cleaning your intestines. And we have Shankha Prakshalana, which is a highly complex technique that's all about cleansing your colon and intestines, but especially colon. We have Nauli Kriya, and that is a Kriya is a purification technique. And one of the most famous and most practiced techniques is Nauli Kriya, which is the churning of the stomach muscles. Obviously not something that you want to do on a full stomach. We have, of course, Kapalabhati, that we it's one of your favorite pranayama techniques, if I remember correctly.
One of the two. And we talked about it in our episodes about breathing techniques, so definitely check that out if you're more interested. But that's a good one to give you energy, right? And I'm guessing in the cleanliness department, so to speak, to take away the I don't know, the bad energy. Or isn't that the case? I don't know what it's
Well, it's cleaning, it's purifying in the sense that it boosts up your digestive fire, that
that as
helps you
well.
be more balanced and have a better digestion. So that's about Kapalabhati in reference to saucha, to cleaning and purifying. We have Trataka, which is a form of meditation where we stare at an object, a photo, the flame of a candle, a picture, or whatever else we feel like staring at. It's about Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi, the stages of meditation. And this is a technique that purifies the mind because it's not all about the body, right? We should have in mind also purification of our thoughts and becoming more focused through a variety of techniques. But yeah, Trataka is a meditation technique that is directly linked to saucha, and by practicing Trataka, we practice saucha, we take care of our we take care to keep our mind and thoughts clean, so to put it. There's also oil pulling, which involves gargling in our mouths, oil such as coconut oil, maybe because it's also quite tasty, or it's not disagreeable. It cleans a lot and helps with cavities and the bacterial flora in our mouths and so on. Some people do it every morning. And we have tongue scraping. It's very easy to do. You don't have to know much yoga or to be much of a yogi to do. It's simply healthy to, because you know, it's just common knowledge that at night, your toxins come out on your mouth. You know that white residue that we notice when we clean our teeth. So we try to get rid of that. It's advisable and it's much better. There are a lot of kriyas in yoga, especially in certain traditions. I only try to treat very high level, a small number of them. Probably the most famous or the most accessible, but there are numerous others. And at this point, I would like to make a parallel with the Muslim culture because I found this information and I found it very similar to what we do in yoga. In the Muslim culture, before they pray, we call this wudu. So they clean their hands, mouth, nose, face, hair, and ears, and finally ankles and feet. In this order. So they do that every time before they pray because you want to meet God clean, in a clean state, because that's a sign of respect, right? And of course, practicing saucha is not only about respecting ourselves, but also the others. So in the similar way, yoga has this cleansing or purifying techniques that we can practice to be cleaner and ready to more ready to receive the fruits of the practice. So that's one thing I wanted to highlight.
I wasn't aware of that. So that's interesting, and I guess I see the point of, you know, being clean for prayer potentially. I will say that on the cleaning techniques that you mentioned, I don't have experience outside of the tongue scraping, which is, it's not a personal experience, it's a experience of someone else that tried it. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because that other person that has tried it eventually ended up thinking, or not ended up thinking, ended up I think concluding that it's actually not as healthy, that actually some of the, and again, I don't know, I think I, you know, saw this as well, but I don't know how scientific it is, right? Everything. Because yeah, there is bacteria to your point, but there's also beneficial ones or something like that. And you can hurt your tongue, or, you know, the body has its own, let's say, ways in which it cleans itself. And so you kind of go into this, it's kind of not needed and you can hurt yourself. But again, it's not a personal experience. So that's just kind of what I heard.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends from person to person. I, incidentally, this tongue scraping thing is probably one of the few that I actually practice every day. It has become a habit, so I associate it with cleaning my teeth. I do it with a regular teaspoon, so it's just perfect for me, and I have very healthy teeth and gums, luckily. yeah, but it depends from person to person. I mean, I wouldn't, we're not in the position to recommend anything to anyone. We're just, you know, talking about what yoga advises in general. And if we're lucky enough to have such an experience, then we talk about
that for experience. Sure. And I think that helps, because that was my not personal experience, as I said, and your personal experience is different, right? They're just anecdotal. And yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see that actually, yeah, for you, it's good, right?
Yeah, I feel good about it. But you know, what's interesting is because people are complaining, you know, when you talk about in class or in teacher training, when you talk about purification techniques, about kriyas in general, people say, oh, but how on God's name am I going to do all of these things at the same time, daily? And the answer here is that we need to focus on one thing for an extended period of time until we get some results for it, and then start another thing. Some things we will carry with us for life, and we take care of those and they become us. We internalize those practices and we do them like brushing our teeth without thinking too much about them, without making an effort. But some others are quite seasonal. For instance, Shankha Prakshalana involves drinking salty water, putting a little bit of strain on your liver, and then, you know, really cleansing your colon out, really doing it after having practiced specific yoga asanas first. But why I'm mentioning it, this is because it's just, it's recommended once or twice a year when seasons change, in theory. The effects are the same, or the benefit or the purpose why we do it is the same of that of doing an enema. So it depends. If you have a serious health issue, you just go to a hospital and you do that, right? But then you get the same effects after having performed Shankha Prakshalana just for maintenance of the system. So yeah.
Yeah,
it's not every day.
No, but I'd say, at least from my side, it's usually good if there are techniques that are more invasive, I guess, to a certain degree, to maybe talk to a doctor before. Because obviously everybody's individual, right? So you like, and things are connected, so to speak, and you might not know, you know, what effects it might you know, have to you yeah. personally versus someone else. So yeah. that would be just my like advice, especially
definitely.
For beginners. But
yeah, general, yeah. My recommendation is to have them, you know, explain to you by a registered authorized teacher. And, you know, once you understand something, then you decide for yourself whether it's safe to try it or not, whether it's too extreme for you or not. And in some cases, we need to seek out medical help. But yeah, reading something online and then applying it to yourself is not the best idea. So we need to be discerning. And yeah. But hey, I wanted to talk about the saucha when, you know, during the actual practice. Right, and by that I mean our yoga mat. Because, of course, if we have a very constant practice, there will be accumulation of what's even the word to use here? Goo? I don't know.
So the advice is, I don't want to steal the show, but it's like, clean your yoga mat, right? That's kind of where we're aiming with this.
Yeah. Long story short, without further ado, guys, clean your yoga mat. You're with your hands and feet after you've been on your feet around the mat, which is maybe the floor of a studio or a gym. Or so, yeah, it's perfectly clear. I don't need to go further into details. Perfect concoction to use in a spray recipient, in a spray a mixture of water and vinegar, maybe, or a few drops of essential oil, such as tea tree. It's very sanitizing, cleaning, purifying, and it also smells nice. So, yeah, lemon water as well. So, all natural.
Yeah, there's also, like, if you want to buy, I think there's, like, sprays. Yeah. I bought a spray from, like, a small business, which smells really nice and is really good. But yeah, you can make it yourself or buy. It's easy enough.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. And also, maybe it's a good time here to mention about the cleanliness around our yoga mats. In Iyengar yoga, they have this obsession that you need to have the surroundings of your mat free of personal belongings, such as water bottles, slippers, clothes, your yoga mat bag or phone or whatever else, you might trip and fall because there's a lot of movement, especially if you do a vinyasa class. I mean, you do a fallen angel or a reverse God knows what. You don't know where your foot might land, right? So you don't want that to be anywhere that's not stable. Also, it takes up a lot of space for the others. In crowded studios, your mats have to be closer to one another than in roomier spaces. Plus, you know, the phone is also, yeah, practice saucha. Close your phone, put it in airplane mode. Honestly, I don't know why people bring their phones to the... I mean, I know why. You need to take a selfie or whatever you need to.
I mean, sometimes it could be like you might need to get a call or whatever, or, you know, there's other reasons. But I think, you know, in general, yeah, to your point, you want to be able to focus on the practice. And what you yeah. said now with, like, you know, clean around the mat, so to speak, so it's a clean environment, kind of yeah. takes me to the sort of, you know, advice of, and something that you might have noticed if you do it, is like a clean environment. And I'm not just talking about around the mat, so in your home and what surrounds you provides you with more mental space and a clear mind, so to speak. The more clutter you have around you, the more it can affect your mental state. So I guess that kind of extends to that a bit, maybe all your points, right? Don't trip, others are there, all that. But I think also just in terms of being able to focus and not have like that clutter around you is probably why they do it in the yoga practice. But I guess extending that to your home, to your environment, to right?
You know, last night before starting the class, a girl comes to me and says, Please don't be upset, but I will need to 10 minutes from now, I'll need to take my phone out and book two classes for tomorrow, because if I they're very crowded, and if I don't do it at that point when the booking window opens, then I'll be left without a spot. I'm like, yeah, but, whatever, okay, just book your classes, it's fine. But otherwise, honestly, there's no reason for, or even, people texting during class, and that kills, that's a self-defeating action. It loses, you lose the whole point of that 60, 50 minutes or 90 minutes that you're supposed to be focused and alone with you and just you and for you. So, but anyway, I
You're
wanted to.
basically wasting your own time at that point, right?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say exactly. And about clean environments, wow, house chores and cleaning are such a. I don't know how people relate to them. Some of us are quite obsessive, such as myself. Others are more lenient and they can tolerate chaotic environment with a lot of clutter. But you know how there's this prejudice or common knowledge that's not. I believe it's completely untrue that, the more artistic beings, so the designers, the painters, the writers, the actors, the whatever, the more artistic characters of us, they thrive in chaos and in surroundings filled with goo and gunk and clutter and papers and rubbish and litter and whatever else. I don't think that's true. I've met quite a number of artists that thrive. And their creative juices start flowing if the space around them is not necessarily extremely clean, but at least organized and not in a pile.
Yeah, for
Elements in a
sure.
pile.
For sure. I do think it does maybe sometimes depend on how your mind works, right? There are maybe situations where in all that chaos you are organized, so to speak. In general, as we both said, it makes sense for most people maybe that when you don't have clutter, when it's clean, you're gonna be in a better mental state. But I think
Yeah.
as with everything, there are exceptions, and some people's mind works, like in all this chaos, I know,
Where
where is
everything
what,
is.
yeah, and this is how I function,
Organized chaos.
which is fine. I guess my advice would be, hey, try to, organize, declutter, clean, see how you feel, and you can judge for yourself if you're the person that actually does need the, that's how their mind works, and they do need that chaos, or you're the person that actually, is better off without everything around them, so to speak.
Exactly. And a quick story I have is that I found this video online of a Japanese influencer, and he was explaining this concept of toilet cleaning, which apparently in the Japanese culture is something extremely famous, and everybody does it. And it was funny because in Europe or in my country, it's something that's not even considered so much. But apparently, they believe that the restroom, the bathroom is the face of the household, and if you make sure to clean your toilet daily and maintain that cleanliness, throughout the day and throughout the week, it's supposed to bring good luck. And apart from that, you become a more modest person, more discerning person, and you eliminate wastefulness from your life. And another argument, another benefit that I found, and this was quite lovely, it's about polishing your heart, because they say, you can't take your heart out and polish it, but what you can do is apply this polishing to the things you present to your eyes. So apparently, a lot of hotshot, very rich people in Japan are doing it, and he was giving these examples of, I know, the head of Matsushita Electronics and of Toyota company and whoever else that humble themselves to clean their toilets daily, and it just brings them good luck and good vibes. So maybe a note for myself to pay more attention to that.
Yeah, I don't know if cleaning your toilet daily really brings you good luck, you know what I mean? But I guess it's a way to get people to do it, so you know. It can't be bad at the end of the day, you know, for you personally in your house. But yeah, for sure not something that I think is practiced maybe even outside Japan. I don't know. I don't have that knowledge, but definitely haven't heard of it in the countries I've been in or in Europe in general. So
Yeah, I found it funny and very interesting, and something maybe to think of and to apply in different cultures as well. One of my biggest concerns in life, I tell you in all honesty, is nature and how it is perishing and how we are simply, being super wasteful about it. And it's quite a serious topic, and I know we feel we don't make a difference, and then the gestures of a single individual don't make much of a difference, but I honestly feel they do, because little by little becomes more. So I think we have this obligation to practice saucha also when it comes to not only ourselves, our surroundings, but also in extension to nature itself. Yeah, and not litter or even pick the litter wasted by others.
I think that's a big problem globally, right? And
Yeah.
yeah, there's societies and countries I think that just generally pay a bit more attention to it or are more mindful, but I guess overall it's a big problem. And yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, of course this applies to you, as we said, the niyamas apply to you, but I think this is extended to the environment you live in, to nature. At the end of the day, if we don't have the nature, we're probably not going to be here ourselves either. So
Yeah,
it
it's
makes
super
sense to
clear.
pay attention. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't even have to know that we are practicing saucha. It just has to be an obligation. We don't have to be necessarily environmentally conscious or sustainable or whatever. But and honestly, it really depends on the characters of individuals, and it varies from culture to culture. But honestly, a fine is always a good idea, because it will make people not do that stupid gesture of littering or whatever a second time, or a third time or a fourth time. Because once you get a fine, or a second time, then you'll make sure to be mindful about it and not repeat the damn habit again. You know, one of the huge problems we are facing in Bucharest, in the capital city of Romania, is pollution. I open Reddit every day, and you have tons of topics with screenshots from air quality apps. And of course, there's a number of cases for that. You burn debris, you use central heating, you drive old cars, and whatnot. But I was actually shocked to realize that whenever I'm leaving the country for even in theory more polluted cities, but generally when I'm abroad, my nose is clean. My sinuses are clean. I can breathe much more easily than when I'm at home. And then when I land in Bucharest and go home, immediately in a few hours, my allergies restart. I start sneezing and my nose is full. And it's just so, you can just tell. You can just tell.
I think there's a number of reasons for this. So, to your point, everything you said, I think also Bucharest does not have green spaces. So, there's nothing there to capture anything. It's just full of blocks and yeah, there's nothing there to do that. I also think or no, actually, there's like different plants in Romania in general that are, let's say, not allowed, for instance, in UK, that can that they're known to provoke allergies. So that's another thing that.
Yeah, definitely. Romania has them as well. Yeah.
And also, lastly, to your point, you said, you know, fine people that litter, for sure. I think there's two things there, right? You know, have the laws that say you can't litter and fines associated with them, and then also apply the laws, which enforce the law, right? Because that's also an important step. If you have the law and you don't enforce it, no one's going to care, unfortunately. I don't think. And I'm just kind of putting this out because I'm sure you know as much as I do, Monica, that sometimes you have the law, but it's not enforced, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, applying it is where the challenge lies. And thinking about, you know, enforcing some rules, there's some practices and some rules that we should be trying to enforce upon ourselves. And with this point that I'm making, I'm trying to lead the discussion towards Saucha when it comes to food and eating clean and the challenges most of us face here. First of all, I'd just like to maybe try to start the discussion the other way around. I was banned from a Facebook group last night. Because I dared, you know, there was a group about vegan eating. It was called, it was in Romania, it was called What Do Vegans Eat or something. And somebody was inquiring what sorts of vegan dishes he should bring to work because it was their birthday, right? And I said, well, whatever you bring, make sure you also have non-vegetarian, non-vegan options because actually most people are not vegetarians here. So they banned me from the group. I found it hilarious because my answer was very well-intended, you know. So, yeah, let's make sure what we eat and but not go to extremes. I mean, also on that note, having cheat days, I think it's really stupid. You can't deprive yourself of nutrients Monday to Friday and then, you know, eat like a pig during the weekend. That's equally stupid, in my humble opinion. But, yeah. What I'm saying is that for me personally, it was always a challenge eating clean, in all honesty.
Yeah, and I think we've touched on this in our episode with David, especially, right? Yeah. So that's like two episodes ago about just like diet in general and how yoga kind of guides you to a healthier diet. And what we said then, and kind of I think it's the same point now is, you know, you have to do what's best for you, so to speak. So yeah, in your quest of, let's say, feeling better, eating cleaner, things like that, you have to really be mindful of how you feel and I guess analyze yourself a bit, right?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, if we talk about vegan, let's say, you might not be able to for whatever reason, right? Maybe you have some intolerances, maybe you have some problems with your digestion, maybe there's a lot of things that can happen, and that, you know, that means that for you that will be worse than not doing it, basically, even though for the other person it's super, let's say, clean, right? And great.
Exactly. So we need to tailor everything to our needs and our bodies.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely strive, I'd say, for, you know, clean, but maybe I'd say just healthy in general and nutritious.
Yeah.
Because that makes you feel better, or should. But then really, like, be mindful of how you actually feel. Be honest. And, yeah, try to, you know, take what works for you and leave what doesn't.
Of course, that and also the fact that we're better out avoiding highly inflammatory foods such as red meat and carbs and sweets and so on and so forth. They put a heavy load on our a waste management system, which includes the lymph. They clog up the lymphatic system, they burden the liver and the intestines, and so on and so forth. So in yoga, a highly alkaline diet is recommended. Pure water, whatever is zesty and tangy and sour, like lemony and all of that, that brings up alkaline vibes. But yeah, one thing that I've noticed is that if you progress towards cleaner eating, then suddenly your body no longer starts craving the bad stuff. This is fascinating to notice. I have noticed it on myself. And also, I think what people are missing is the realization of the fact that extremely healthy foods, or at least non-inflammatory foods, are not actually tasteless. You can do a lot of seasoning and techniques, and there's a plethora of recipes out there to also make your food quite tasty. So that's no excuse. And it's a super childish and uncivilized argument to say, yeah, but healthy food is gross. That's nothing can be farther from the truth, honestly.
Yeah, I guess to give people some grace here, I'd say, you know, everything is super modified right now. We know this, to really get you, you know, they have people that study when they do like sweets and stuff, like how sweet it needs to be, what's the ratio. So it really gets you hooked, let's say, because that's ultimately what they want. They want you to buy more, right? So it is made in a way to be super tasty, in a way that you can almost not not have it. And then of course that compared to whole foods, you know, no matter what you do to them, won't taste the same, because it's not chemically enhanced to taste, you know, to overload your taste. But so I guess from that perspective it can be, but of course taste can be, you know, changed, right? And we can all see this, because like depending on the culture you're coming from and your, let's say, staple foods, you would like some foods, right? And those would taste good, maybe for someone else would taste bad, and that's because your taste buds are used to that. So you can you can change that, and in time you will probably find that whole foods do taste okay, but you need to be able to kind of give up a bit on the very chemical enhanced ones to be able to start, you know, tasting the whole foods, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense to me. My story here is actually quite recent one. We have this very posh shoe place in town. That's a special type of cake. I'm not sure whether you know it, choux à la crème. Right, so
yeah, I do, yeah.
So there's a special there's this female pastry chef who studied in Paris or something, very special techniques, and she uses most of her, she claims a high and extremely high percentage of the ingredients she uses are of natural origin, right? So my problem when tasting her cakes was that they were too bland. Because my taste buds have been whipped with so many chemicals and, you know, excited and challenged every single day with a lot of artificial chemicals and sweeteners and condiments and seasonings and whatnot. So now, obviously, something that's all natural, I find it to be quite bland. And it's, yeah, I had this realization and that became quite sad, because probably our bodies will adapt to the many chemicals that we are ingesting, but I think it'll take a while. So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, you can re-educate your taste buds, I guess. So from that perspective, it's just, taking the time and giving yourself the time and the space and the grace, right? Not like being, you know, too hard on yourself. Oh, okay, I didn't want to eat whatever cookie or whatever it is, but now I did, so, you know, I failed. Because you have to understand that, first off, you didn't fail. You only failed when you completely quit, right? So that's
yeah, absolutely. So it's not a failure.
Yeah, then also it is made like this. So it's almost outside of your control to a certain degree, right? It is made specifically like this. So I think, yeah, just lead with, you know, grace and kindness to yourself as well, on this path of, let's say, maybe getting to a healthier, more nutritious diet.
Yeah, ideally. Another layer of practicing saucha is whatever we bring in our homes and put on our bodies. Simple example is that of jewelry. If we buy jewelry that's not that has been worn by other persons or manufactured manually by a person, you know, handmade, it's always good to leave it for 24 hours in salt water. You know, water with sea salt or Himalayan salt, or simply leave it in the sun rays for the ultraviolet rays to clean it and to purify it. The same goes for crystals and yeah, the home environment, I guess. We all know the, you know, saging the room or the house. So it can be, you know, we can market how much we want, but it can't hurt, right? It smells nice and it brings some balance to the atmosphere. So also something that I like doing.
Yeah, and I guess linking it to this and kind of the environment that we touched upon a bit earlier, and to the mind and the mental state, I'd say then you can apply Sosha to the mind as well. So like, you know, for lack of a better term, clean mind, but like your thoughts, right? Your pattern of thoughts, how you think about different things, how you think about other people, how you think about yourself, right? Are those, let's say, clean, pure thoughts, right? Or are those super negative? Are those affecting you? And how can you understand that and maybe look to change that, right? Because, you know, the old saying where attention goes, energy flows and stuff like that, right? So it's like if you're in a constant loop of negative thoughts, that's how your world outside of the thoughts is going to translate into. So I guess applying this to that is, or this is another layer of applying Sosha, I guess, for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. So actually having, you know, made a mental recap of the points we touched during this episode, I think, in all honesty, it's one of the easiest niyamas to practice this saucha, I would say. Yeah, it's also something quite rewarding because you can see the benefits immediately in most cases. So yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess it remains to be seen as we do the other niyamas, you know, which one wins. But yeah, so far, at least from our conversation, and I think the points we made, it doesn't feel like anything too strenuous or anything like that.
Yeah,
I would say maybe outside the actual cleaning techniques, I would put that maybe a bit outside of this, because I feel like those are, you know, those actually kind of require maybe more time, and then also, as I said, maybe
dedication.
In some research as well, versus, you know, looking at how you can declutter your space or other things we said, right, that are kind of more basic.
Yep, definitely. I feel the same. Yeah. And I think this sums up what I wanted to mention about saucha. Was there anything that we wanted to highlight?
I don't think so. Or I am not. I don't have anything else to highlight outside of all these things that we talked about. So the yamas and yamas, they all go hand in hand, right? So, and as we'll go through everything, we'll see how that paints, I guess, like a whole picture of the, let's say, guides that yoga has for us in terms of how we view the world and how we view ourselves. So yeah, that's about it. With that, I think we wrap up our episode today. Again, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And we will see you next time with a new episode. Bye, guys.
See you next week. Bye.